Our committee?
Good, thank you.
Revenue Committee for April 24th, 2009 will come to order. Colleagues, we have people here from the Treasury, and so we're going to open the work session on House Bill 2105. Please note, I have a bare quorum, so everybody please stay in the room until we get more people here. Mazza.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, morning. House Bill 2105, we discussed over a few sessions now. And the last time when we were discussing this in a work session, we asked for a few things to try to accomplish with the new bill. First of all, you wanted to hear from some investment officers from the agencies, and we asked them to come today, and they're here. And then you wanted to know about how much there is state bonds that are in the investment pool, and I think we have that information too. And then we had a couple amendments that we discussed. They were at the time 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. It seems like 1, 2, and 3 were amendments that have the purpose behind them accomplished, while 4 and 5 we had a bigger discussion on. What you have in front of you today is the amended 4 and 5 to the 7 and 8. And the 7 and 8, the dash 7 and the dash 8, have they deal with two main issues, primarily under the authority of this purchase program. The dash 7 gives the actually the dash 8. Dash 7 would have the requirement for two types of reporting. The first report would be the immediate 48 hours report. This says when this is being practiced, we have a 48 hours to report to the legislature through the revenue committees and the assembly in the regular session. And when not in session and not immediately available to the legislative revenue officer and legislative fiscal officer during the interim. And then the second level of reporting would be to come every February 1st of each year. So that will give you a chance to hear this in a regular session in the odd year or the abbreviated session in the even years, to give a report on the level of use of this type of purchase. Now, this is, I think, both it was meant to be with the state buying and as well as the local governments. However, we at that time we talked about local governments as much as possible, and it seems this might still need some work. The dash 8 have the changes the place where the other investment buying practice, take it back to the section of the statute where it is in the investment section of the statute rather than this section. And also puts the February 1st Treasury report on the amounts and levels of buying of this type of security being a state debt by the investment officer. Those are the two amendments in front of you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And unfortunately, because these came about 4:30 last night, well, it wasn't evening yet, but felt like it.
Thank you. Do these amendments essentially replace all of the others?
No, Mr. Chair. The ones 1, 2, and 3 are still in play. Okay. We have not combined them yet. 7 and 8 replace 4, and 5. So if you think that all these amendments are the right type of amendments, we could combine them all together as either part of the passing the bill or part of the process before passing the bill, because we don't have a fiscal the final revenue statement and which amendments we have, we might probably not be able to look at the complete picture at this time.
And do any of these amendments require an immediate report in the event that the bonds are repurchased in a stress situation?
Yes, Mr. Chair. In the dash 7, if you look at the first page, line 7, subsection 6 says within
it.
2 business days after using this authority to purchase bonds.
Right. Thank you. I had because it wasn't in boldface, I didn't look at it. Appreciate that. Any other questions for Mazza? I see that there are people from the Treasury here. I assume you might like to be heard about some of these. Good morning.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Silvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. We also got these amendments at 4:30 last night, and after reviewing them last night and this morning, I have to inform the committee that the State Treasurer's Office will oppose both the dash 7s and the dash 8s as they're inconsistent with what we discussed earlier. We have the dash 7s, which are almost perfect, except we have a subsection 3 on page 2, which requires the February reporting that we discussed with regards to the local use of the bill. The State Treasurer's Office is perfectly willing, able, and ready to work with the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission in putting that report together. However, we do feel that there needs to be a stipulation that the information is what is reasonably and readily available, as the State Treasurer's Office has no mechanism to compel local governments to report this type of activity. And we feel that that would be outside of what we already do. And I don't believe that MDAC can compel that type of that reporting either. With regards to the Dash 8 amendments, the subsection 3 under section 6 on page 1, this is a reporting of the Treasurer's activities as investment officer, which we already partake in, and as I understood our last committee meeting, the functions of the Treasurer's investment officer were not germane to the bill. If we want to discuss this further and craft something that works for us, that's something that we're able to do. But this is either the way I read it, redundant to the existing reporting if it's only constrained to the use of the bond purchases within the bill, or if it's intending to speak to the larger bond purchases, we need to stipulate that these are discrete purchases and not part of a larger pool which may contain bonds that we buy as part of a package. Other than that, we still support the adoption of Dash 1, 2, and 3, and hope to make these tweaks to the Dash 7s and 8s.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
It occurs to me that all the municipalities, school districts, any of these issuing agencies other than you, all have boards that maybe they should get the reports instead of you, unless you tell me that there's some compelling reason why the state would need to know this. I mean, all these boards are fiduciary responsible, mm-hmm. and so the requirement of a report to them makes sense rather than to you, unless you think that the state is at risk by not getting this information.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, that sounds like good plan from our point of view. We've got requirements to report the state use, which we can certainly do, and we feel that local governments ought to and probably will report this use when they use it, and we support that fully and would be more than happy to work with MDAC in putting that together. But
what I'm proposing here is a statutory requirement that they do report if they do this and explain what they're doing to their boards.
To their own boards.
To their own boards.
Ah, so you would change, sorry if I may, you would change on page 2 of lines of the Amendment 7, you would change lines 2 through 10 so that the governing operatives of the various agencies that have their own boards report to their boards about what they've done.
Exactly. And I guess I was asking them whether reporting it to them or not having them have that report would put us at risk. I mean, the important thing is that these boards, in your case, the legislative committee, but in the case of a local group, be it a school board or a county or a municipality, needs to report to their commission or, and I don't know how you'd write that in statute, but do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It would be the local group that needs to get this report and understand statutory obligation for this report be made to those folks and made clear to them what they're doing.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carol McCoug. I'm a partner with the law firm of K&L Gates, and we serve as bond counsel to a number of state agencies as well as a number of local governments. And currently I'm serving as chair to the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. In response to the point, I believe that MDAC would support the requirement for a report from the local governments to their respective legislative body. I think that my only, not hesitation, I think is too strong, but my thought in terms of making sure that this report is not a prerequisite to the utilization of the statute, as similarly with respect to the state, where it's a report within the 2 business days of using it, because as we all know, timing circumstances may be such that they will need to utilize the statute prior to the legislative body being able to assemble. So I think if that is sort of the timing of that is not a prerequisite, then I think we would be in support of that concept and certainly not require a report to the state treasurer's office because, as we've noted, as it is, the availability of the information may or may not be very reliable. So I think having the information at the state level is interesting, but we know not necessarily reliable.
Let me ask a slightly different question because I'd like to get this bill resolved. It sounds to me, and maybe I would like you to go over this again so I get so I'm certain I've got it. Dash 1s, 2, and 3 all contain separate items which are important to make this thing work. Yes? 4, 5, and 6 we've essentially discarded. 7 you're okay with, except for lines 1 through 10 on page 2.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, we do like lines 1 through 10 on page 2. We would like a line 9.5 or so that stipulates that information is what is reasonably and readily available from the local governments.
My problem with that is I think it's a waste of effort to build a report that only contains part of the information. I don't know that it is at all useful to us. And what happens is these things get reified, and people assume that's the universe, and it isn't. Personally, and I don't know what your view on this, Representative Berger, is, but I'd rather do without it altogether than write a report that is essentially useless.
Well, that is my point. What we're talking about here is a report to the treasurer on something that the municipalities or the local governments do. My suggestion is simply that they be required to report to their governing bodies, not to the state treasurer.
Right. And my response to that would be that's probably the subject of another bill where we'd actually have a full-blown hearing with those other agencies, and they could tell us whether that's a good idea and how expensive it would be and how difficult it would be.
If you want to skip it, that's fine, but I'll be back with it.
I think it's a very fine idea for a bill. I don't mean that, but I think we don't have the information upon which we could base that kind of a clause in this bill. Although the relating clause does work. Representative Riley.
You said exactly what I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you. All right, my suggestion to resolve this particular piece is that we simply do with outlines 1 through 10 on page 7, which I think does away with that report, which I don't think is of any use at all if we don't have complete information. I think the places where there are problems are precisely the ones that are not going to tell you, right?
Chair Barnard, that's correct. If it pleases the committee, then we would support the amendment with those changes.
All right. And then on the dash 8, repeat for us what the problem is with the dash 8.
Chair, members of the committee, the dash 8 amendments appear to do a couple of things. One, some of them are redundant with some of the changes that were included in the dash 3 amendments, which are already being brought in.
Yep.
The addition to the bill that dash 8 seems to require is an additional report from the state treasurer's office reporting on the purchase of state bonds by this treasurer as an investment officer, not in the context that we have been discussing, which is the purchase by an agency of variable rate bonds in a situation where
right.
They need to take them off the market. We think that this is more far-reaching than we had anticipated.
And that information is available anyway, isn't it?
Yes.
In other forms.
That's right.
I mean, if we want to know what purchases of state bonds were made by the PERS account, we can find that out other ways, can't we? For example?
Representative Barnhart, I believe so.
Yeah, are any of your portfolios secret?
No.
Except perhaps in the venture capital account, perhaps?
I know the short... Through the chair, this is Laura Lockwood McCall, Director of Debt Management, and I don't oversee the investment division, but it's my understanding that, for example, the short-term fund, the monthly portfolios down to every single bond is on the Internet.
Yeah.
Because I've shared it before with the rating agencies who've asked.
Right.
I can't speak to the PERS portion of the portfolio. I'm less familiar with how those reports are put together.
So there's nothing in the 8s that isn't in one of the other amendments or this one piece that you just referred to.
That's correct.
So if we simply discarded the 8s, we would not be requiring this redundant report, and everything else is covered in 1, 2, 3, or 7. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Any other questions for this group? My proposal, colleagues, is that we ask for a combined amendment of 1, 2, 3, and 7, and that we ask for the fiscal and revenue statements based on those, and we get the bill out of here. What comments about that?
7, Mr. Chair, with the deletions of
right.
lines
1 through 10.
Through 10 on page 2.
Correct. Thank you. Yes. Does that work for the Treasury?
It does.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, that would be acceptable to Treasury, and we would enthusiastically support that.
Well, that's a big improvement on this bill, isn't it? All right. Anything else then this morning on House Bill 2105? Obviously, we're not ready to move it. We have to get the combined amendment and the fiscal and revenue statements for that combined amendment. I'm sorry?
You want to hear from the agency?
No. Yes, please.
If it's acceptable, through the chair, Representative Benz asked at the last hearing if I could get some additional data about other states and their particular practices in this regard.
Yes.
So I...
You're here. Let's do it.
Well, and I wasn't able to get a 50-state survey, but I did put it out through what's called the State Debt Management Network, which is a blog that we share, and we ask each other questions about debt management practices. So my responses came in from 6 states. And the states that responded who said that they already had these statutes in place for the state treasurer's office included Washington, Kentucky, Utah, and Ohio. Alabama responded and said they don't have that available. So that was my survey. That's who responded for you, just for the record.
They're all overworked, too. Is that helpful?
It is.
It is. Thank you. Anything else on House Bill 2105 this morning? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Hopefully we can have a bill that will deal with this hopefully very unusual situation, and we'll tighten up the whole process. Thanks very much. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2105. Let's open the work session on 2308. I see Mr. Sheen is here. 2308.
Mr. Chair, again, last time when we discussed House Bill 2308, that was on the first of the month, we were discussing after the committee a number of concepts to be amended with the bill. This had to do with the time allowed and so on. And this you have in front of you, the product between a discussion of the, I don't know if it was an ad hoc work group that Vice Chair Benz was working with, but basically put basically the dash one in front of the committee, where it takes the number of years from 9 to 18, and then inserts section 6 and basically clean up the bill, and it seems like people have a level of satisfaction with these dash one from the work group that tried to resolve them. And just to add, still the fiscal impact is minimal, and not having an impact on this.
Okay. Mr. Fans?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It might be best if we invite Mr. Shane to come
back. Yep, let's do it.
And he could quickly summarize the nature of the changes.
Thank you. He can also tell us if they work.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the Revenue Committee. My name is Jeffrey Sheen. I'm an attorney and partner with the law firm of Samuel Jolin Cantor in Portland, Oregon. I worked with Representative Benz at the conclusion of the last session to work out essentially two accommodations to the Department of Revenue. The first accommodation being that originally the bill asked for, gave the Department of Revenue 9 months to make a decision on whether or not to respond to a request for release of liability from a personal representative who applied to the department for that. And the thought that 9 months was a little bit too short, given the staffing issues, that was increased to 18 months. So therefore you see two provisions in the bill changed from 9 to 18 months. The other provision that's being added is there are two statute of limitations. The first draft addressed the statute of limitations that limited the ability of the department to go after an individual taxpayer. And we have a provision in the existing bill that ties it to the same period of time as income taxes. The department also wanted to have the companion statute of limitations, which is the obligation of the department to issue a refund if a refund is requested. And the purpose of this other amendment is to tie the refund obligation of the department to the same statute of limitations as you currently have in the income tax arena. And if I recall correctly, I think it's 3 years after return is filed or 2 years after the tax is paid, whichever is the latter, and I could stand to be corrected on that. With those provisions, we're amenable to the amendment and request that it be passed out of this committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Sheen? Does the department want to be heard? No? You're happy, huh? All right. Department says it's happy. All right. Thank you. Anything else? I think this deals with the issues that came up in the committee. I'm interested to know, just as in matter of passing, that in one place we insert the number 18 and in another place we insert the word 18, but that, I guess, is something that LC in its great wisdom has determined as the appropriate manner of dealing with this. I don't think it has any substantial importance. Are we ready to work this bill? I didn't find a revenue impact statement.
There is no revenue impact
statement. There is no revenue impact. All right. We can take that as authoritative?
Yes, sir.
All right. Representative Benz?
Sure. I move the amendment to 2308, dated 4/16/09.
Representative Benz moves the -1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the -1? Hearing none, the -1 is adopted. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move HB 2308 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 2308 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection to that motion? No objection. The motion is carried. Do you want to carry that?
I would be
Representative
happy to
Benz will carry, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2308. We're working our numbers down, colleagues. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sheen, very much. And did I close that? I did. Okay. Let's open. Representative Berger, are you ready on 2700?
I am.
We'll open a work session on House Bill 2700. Day?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. House Bill 2700 clarifies procedures for late filing of property tax exemption by certain eligible entities and public bodies. And it creates a late filing procedure for first-time filers and public entities with good and sufficient cause for late exemption filing. By the way, there are late filing procedures already, but what this bill does is it creates a late filing procedure for first-time filers, as defined in the bill, and public entities with good and sufficient cause for late exemption filing. And it takes effect on 91st day following adjournment, sign and die. Now, with Amendment 2, what it does is it eliminates retroactive claims for exemption. So there's no revenue impact. It's prospective. In the packet, you will find a fiscal statement here.
Right. Thank you. If I understand the amendment, basically it eliminates Section 4.
Yes, sir.
All right. Representative Berger?
Do you want me to move it or do you want me to talk about it?
Either one.
Well,
it might be useful to talk about our reasoning and thoughts on it.
If you recall, this, members of the committee, for me, gets at a sort of a statewide answer to the issue that has come up in other districts besides mine. Representative Beyer has a very similar bill. And gives clear guidance to county assessors as to what they do when a first-time filer just doesn't get it for sufficient reasons. Usually it's a volunteer screw-up. And this gives them all a clear directive as to what to do. The -2 amendment takes out any clawback, so there is no fiscal. This is, I think, going to help our county assessors and make it pretty clear statewide how to treat these particular things that come up.
Right. And I want to let the committee know that I particularly like this bill because it will reduce the incidence of requests that we get from what did you call them, volunteer screw-ups. And this committee seems to get them every year, and maybe this will end that.
I would hope so, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Phillips, do you have any comments? No, the department's okay with this, then, I take it. Okay, Representative Berger, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2700.
Representative Berger moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2700. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 2s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2700 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves House Bill 2700 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? All right. The bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Berger, would you like to carry?
Be proud to. Thank you.
Representative Berger will carry. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2700. See, we can move these things along as we get going.
I thought Representative Berger might let that go to consent calendar.
I didn't even ask. All right. Let's see. Those two are done. That one we're not ready with. 2809. Is that yours? We'll open that work session on House Bill 2809. Day.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, House Bill 2809 allows certain municipalities to irrevocably convert an urban renewal plan from a standard property tax rate plan to a reduced property tax rate plan for consolidated billing rate purposes. It takes effect on passage with the amendment. Now, the difference between standard rate and reduced rate, again, as you recall, is that standard rate includes property tax rates for general obligation bonds and local option levies approved by voters after October 6, 2001, whereas a reduced rate plan doesn't include that. So the rate is lower depending on the rate. Urban renewal plan moves from standard rate to reduced rate, then the consolidated billing rate, tax rate, would either stay the same or decline. So urban renewal plan will receive slightly less money. That way, taxpayers save a little money. And it depends on whether the general obligation bonds and or local option levies were approved after October 6, 2001. Again, Dash 1 amendment, what it does is it declares an emergency and makes the bill effective on its passage.
Thank you.
And with that...
this is the bill that affects two counties, isn't it?
The city of the Dells.
The city of
Lake Oswego.
And Lake Oswego. Oh, two cities. Okay. Yes, sir. All right. Okay. Any discussion on this? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of us had the pleasure of seeing this in the previous committee in Sustainability and Economic Development, and our good chair of that committee, his request. I had a chance to meet with some of the proponents and am convinced that this is a technical fix for a couple of cities that were caught in a change in the law at one point. So,
yeah.
In my opinion, it's good to go, Mr. Chair.
And this goes to the floor if we send it out, yes? There's no subsequent? No? Okay. Representative Bailey, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment dated 33109 to House Bill 2809.
Representative Bailey moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2809. Is there discussion? Any objection to the amendment? Without objection, it is so ordered. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2809 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2809 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? All right, the bill will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm inclined to ask Representative Huffman to carry. Is there any objection to that? Anybody here want to carry it? All right, we'll ask Representative Huffman to carry, and if not, I'll ask one of the committee members to carry. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2809 and open the work session on House Bill 2815. Chris.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in your packet on House Bill 2815, as you recall from the hearing last week, I believe it was, creates an interagency compliance network. And in the bill, there are a number of blanks relating to how money gets distributed to state agencies. And you have in your packet today a dash A2 that accomplishes those numbers. And they line up with what Representative Holby described last time in the blanks in Section 2 on pages 2 and 3, so that if you're looking at the dash amendment starting on line 9 of that dash amendment, 8% of the revenue would go to the Department of Revenue for enforcing tax laws, 8% would go to the Employment Department, 8% to DCBS, 8% to the Construction Contractors Board, 16% to Bureau of Labor and Industries, 35% to the Department of Justice, and 17% to the Department of Revenue for distribution to members of the compliance network. So there are two pieces there for Department of Revenue for their two different roles in the network. And then the last blank that gets filled in is on page 3, line 31 of the bill. And that is, it creates the $7 fee. That is the funding source. The other change contained in the amendment is there are a number of places where, for example, on page 1, line 20 of the bill, it refers to laws relating to taxation and employment, and the dash amendment changes that to taxation or employment. And there are a number of places that that wording occurs.
All right, and the point being that if you violated either one of them, you'd be subject to these provisions.
Exactly, and not,
right.
not both of them, right?
It wouldn't
right.
require that both of them be involved. Okay.
Yes.
All right. This bill is, if I recall correctly, was subject to a substantial amount of work in the work group and in the Consumer Protection Committee. Colleagues, what's your pleasure? Where are we on this one?
Representative Bailey? Representative Berger?
I'm not going to support the bill, Mr. Chair. You can move it. I'll speak to it.
Okay. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the dash A2 amendment dated 41709 to House Bill 2815.
Representative Bailey moves the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2815. Is there a discussion? Is there objection to the amendment? Amendment's adopted. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 28.
Oh, we're not ready. Oh. Sorry. We're out of order. We don't move anything. I'm told we don't have the the paperwork. I would like to have the discussion, though, that Representative Berger alluded to.
Well,
would you like to say a little bit more?
I simply think that if we, as a committee, if you recall, I voted against the other tax compliance or indicated my displeasure with the pilot project on tax compliance. If we believe tax compliance is a significant issue, we need to take our money and fund positions in the DOR to deal with tax compliance. This is a new fee that funds 9 new positions across many agencies, and this is not where I want our money to go, and so I will object to this bill.
Okay. Anyone else? Senator Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be a no also. My thinking on it parallels, in some respects, Representative Berger's. I like the idea of trying to figure out a way of making people more likely to pay what they should be paying. I agree that the more direct approach is the audit approach, and sadly, when we try to organize these things, there is the perception that large government is trying to, you know, do something incorrect. When in point of fact, all large government is trying to do is collect the taxes. But the audit approach is the more direct, clear, and of course, normal approach that people shouldn't be able to object to. There's also the issue of the fee, and although these things have to be paid for, it always strikes me as challenged when we try to link the nature of this particular fee, people that are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing, filing. Now we increase those that are compliance cost to help head off those that are not, and it's probably true when we hire folks to audit also, but it does seem that we ought to be spreading that cost across a broader swath.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my reasons for voting no.
Thank you. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point about the fee and who should be paying it, these are the folks who actually want this to happen because of the people who are not following the rules are making their competition much more difficult.
Right. Thank you. Other comments today on this bill?
Mr. Chair, can I?
Yes, please, Representative Cole.
Thank you. I actually just have a few questions. Maybe my thinking on this is just a bit simplistic, so maybe Chris can help me. But you know, I can understand the concern about spreading this out across a bunch of agencies. But it seems to me that part of this lands in a bunch of these agencies. 8% to the Employment Department to make sure folks are complying with workers' compensation. That's something that if you're paying somebody under the table, you're not doing, and that's outside of the audit within the DOR. That's something important and part of compliance that has to do with something a bit less connected to directly taxation. BOLI, I mean, I think obviously there's a very important role for BOLI in this, and they're going to be able to help us comply and probably be able to work with DOR and give them information that they wouldn't otherwise have. And then really a question I have is, there's a big number in here for the Department of Justice, and is the thinking behind that if there is more auditing going on, more of these things that are coming up, that the DOJ will be seeing, will be more utilized by the Department of Revenue, and so that would be, you know, the DOJ would probably get that money one way or the other, seemingly. Either we give that 35% to the Department of Revenue and they hand it right back over to DOJ for their attorneys, or we hand it to DOJ and they have a division that's working in concert. And is that correct? Does that make sense, Chris?
We had some testimony on that issue. I wonder if the department would like to chime in on that question.
Did we have testimony? I'm sorry that I don't remember that testimony.
Yeah, well, it covered a pretty wide swath all at once, and I think it went by fairly quickly. Representative Holvey, who actually did most of the legwork on the bill, isn't here. So,
good morning.
Do you have a comment on this question?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. I also have not been that intimately involved with the development of this bill, but I do think that is the purpose, is that the agencies that are working together on these issues identify problems, and then there is enforcement activity by the Department of Justice when we refer those people to them. So that's the funding for the Department of Justice, is to mm-hmm. pursue those investigations and criminal enforcement.
And to the extent that this fee covers that cost, they wouldn't be billing one of the other departments for the work.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Yeah. All right. So I think you're right. Yeah, Representative Call.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, and would you say that, you know, take BOLI, for example, they're going to see things that you might not in their daily operations that would help you bring folks into compliance, especially from what I see here, is the intention of this bill is to work to get at people who are misclassified, people who are working as independent contractors or who are doing things under the table. Is BOLI more intimately related with folks like that, such that they can give you information and you feel like working in concert is going to help you with your auditing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, yes, the way the legislature has structured the system in Oregon is different agencies have different responsibilities for different programs. We administer the income tax program. The Employment Department administers the unemployment tax program. And then you have several others that administer different programs. So those are not centralized in one organization. So you have to have, and in fact, the legislature has directed us to cooperate with other agencies in classification of workers. You did that several years ago when you adopted a definition of independent contractors for these various purposes. And so we have worked in concert in developing administrative rules that define what those workers are. This is an enforcement piece to bring the agencies together, allow them to work in concert to administer the various laws that you've put in place regarding those workers.
And Mr. Chair, if
yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you. And so just to dig a little, just a tiny bit further on this, and thank you. And I do hope Representative Berger's comments I don't think are wrong with regards to the fact that if we have more auditors in your division, we're generating money, and I really hope Ways and Means is hearing that message loud and clear. But these two things aren't mutually exclusive to the Department of Revenue's perspective. We can have greater enforcement here and potentially more auditors, and we're going to be able to get greater compliance and greater revenue into the state that's due to us. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, I would not disagree with that statement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other, yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've heard this bill a few times now. Being in
this is not the first year, is it?
Not the first year, and it was in consumer protection, where I also serve. And the director has come two or three times to consumer protection to talk about this bill, along with the construction Contractors Board and DCDS, and my take from all of that is that these are folks who want to contribute, and especially the CCB, the Construction Contractors Board, the folks that they work with say they will be happy to pay this extra fee in order to make it a level playing field. They can't compete with people who are not following the rules.
Thank you. Other comments about this bill today?
Just to say,
yes,
Mr. Chair, I'm fully supportive of this bill.
Thank you. I appreciate that. If there's nothing else, Representative Riley?
Mr. Chair, the CCB is in the room, and if I've said something wrong, they could correct me.
I certainly appreciate hearing from the CCB. Thank you, Representative Riley. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. Craig Smith. I would never disagree or seek to correct Representative Riley. So let me make sure that's correct. The Construction Contractors Board does have an issue with its budget. We are a little skinny right now, and me notwithstanding, in terms of being able to get our work done. And so that's one of the problems right now, is we are trying to find ways to get the job done. This is kind of another issue. This is the issue of independent contractors paying under the table. It's not really a license compliance issue. And I wouldn't want to represent what the industry is willing to pay on this. I don't know precisely. I can tell you that the industry has been very supportive of the Construction Contractors Board increasing fees to the point that current service levels from last biennium could be maintained. And to the extent that that extrapolates into some fee structure for this bill, so be it. But I'm not sure if the industry has testified on this or not, and so that's what I'd say on that.
Right. Now, Representative Bence, you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It strikes me that the folks here, at least I support, trying to figure out how to make folks that deal in the cash basis responsible and for all the things that they're not responsible for when they deal in cash. Right. The issue here, and I think the point that Representative Riley was making, is that somehow all of those who pay annual reports or pay for articles of incorporation or pay for other filings have been willingly subjected to an additional $7 fee on top of that $50 fee I believe they already pay. And I'm just wondering if you, I think you've indicated, I want to make sure I heard you correctly, that you would not know if indeed all of the folks that pay those fees are going to be happy about this additional $7. Is that what I'm hearing? That you don't know or that you do or that there's a poll done or kind of need to know?
Chair Barnhart and Representative Bentz, yes, I cannot comment on what members of other industries are interested in paying. I do not have knowledge on that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Representative Bentz.
The means of getting to the those that pay cash for that and thus don't pay unemployment, don't pay Social Security, don't pay any number of things that they should be paying is multifaceted. And yes. This would give you some idea, you think, of one way of getting at it. Are there better ways, or is this just one?
All right. Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, I think the answer is this is one novel way that hasn't been tried. The cooperation between the agencies today is significant. I think this would help fund. You know, there is no free lunch. We know that. We've heard that over and over again. But if the Assembly determines that this is a problem that needs to be corrected, and I'm talking about misclassification of workers as well as what I believe, particularly in the construction industry, is a very difficult issue, and that is folks being paid under the table. As a matter of fact, that's my second largest complaint is to this agency is when and how are you going to correct this problem? And, of course, we do our darndest. I think this bill would help, particularly with our ability to try to focus on that one issue. And so for that reason, of course, we are cooperative with the folks that are sponsoring this legislation.
And, Mr. Chair, one final point.
Please, go ahead.
I had actually recommended a change, and which I believe now has taken the form of an amendment, to broaden the department's opportunity under this bill to make it work better for the purposes you outline, and I believe it is captured in one of the amendments.
Yeah, this one.
Dash A2.
Yeah, that we adopted.
Correct. And so the purpose that you hope this bill will work for is one that I support in general. Specifically, though, the cost of it, I do not. The overall hope that you will be, or we will be successful in making people engage in cash more responsible is one we all share.
Yes. Thank you. I thought there was another. But
it was me, but my question was asked by.
Yeah, perhaps not. You know, the interesting thing about this particular bill, I mean, you alluded to it, that I think your board, as is true with all the other licensing boards, to my knowledge, is that one of your responsibilities is to try to prevent the unauthorized practice, or in your case, unauthorized work without a license. I was a licensee of the Board of Psychologists Examiners, and we had that as part of our rule to try to prevent the unlicensed practice of psychology. And so the licensees paid for the work that the board was able to do in order to pursue that on behalf of the public and, of course, also on behalf of licensees who might be at a detriment to unlicensed people who don't follow the rules.
Yes.
This particular bill covers a much broader situation than just your licensees, doesn't it?
Yes, Senator Barnhart, Representative Barnhart, that's absolutely correct. It does, and I can imagine that while it was in consumer protection, there was some discussion about concentration in the construction industry. That's where there was some testimony. We talked a little bit about what DOJ's involvement is going to be, and there was testimony there about a court case. This is criminal enforcement by DOJ regarding a work done in the construction industry and the great work that they did, but it's expensive work. That put a stop to criminal activity in the construction industry. But there has been discussion that this would be broader than just construction. And I think that, I think that you can expect that.
Right. Thank you. I think that's helpful for me in understanding why the Consumer Protection Committee chose this fee rather than simply asking that licensing fees be increased, which it might be the case if it was a narrower object. Thank you. I appreciate that. Anything else? Is there any other discussion that you'd like to have now on this bill? I don't see any. We'll close the work session on this bill. Colleagues, the bills that we haven't finished with today are also posted for Monday and Tuesday, aren't they? And we don't have anything else posted for Monday and Tuesday, so if we manage to finish them, we'll have... We have Betsy also on Tuesday. In addition,
that
we have...
That should only take a minute.
Yeah. But that'll take only 15 minutes.
We are here Monday, though, Mr. Chair. Is that correct?
We are here Monday. Yes. We will be looking at the two bills that we did not pass today. Hopefully we'll have paperwork finished on those. I don't know whether we'll actually have that amendment done or not, but it's also posted for Tuesday as well. I do need to carry over. Thank you. That was the point of all this. We'll carry over House Bill 2105 to Monday so we actually can work it if the paperwork is ready. And is there anything else, Paul? Have I got it? All right. With that, committee is adjourned. Have a great weekend.
Just